Senator Levin has already drafted legislation, and in today's hearing, Senator Coburn, the ranking minority member, said that he still had some issues, although unspecified, with it, and he would like to support it. So I think the legislation is there, and that in conjunction with prior legislation that actually Senator Levin and then Senator Obama drafted on banking secrecy and offshore tax havens, there is legislation on the table that could be moved forward. That combined with some basic better enforcement of regulation and banking secrecy laws and other things by the U.S. government, this could move relatively quickly. And I think the hearings showed how scandalous the situation is when people can literally bring tens of millions of dollars of stolen money into the country and buy luxury items all over the place.
Why did the hearings focus on four case histories of African countries? Is this degree of corruption only practiced on such a large scale in Africa, or can the leaders of Latin America and Asian countries also get away with this?
Well, the Senate hearings historically for, say, the last decade or so have looked all over the world. In this particular case, I think the cases of Gabon, Equatorial Guinea, Angola, and Nigeria are particularly egregious and recent cases of corruption. I mean, these all happened within roughly the last 10 years, and they're all egregious cases of where corrupt leaders have basically used the U.S. banking system or U.S. property and other things to spend their stolen proceeds. So I think these really stand out in that regard. And the other factor is that, at least in the case of Nigeria, Equatorial Guinea, and Angola, you're talking about three of the four largest oil producers in sub-Saharan Africa. So these are not just small countries. These are countries that produce a lot of oil. Two of them are OPEC members, and all three are major suppliers of oil to the United States.
All right. First, let's consider Angola, a fraudulent $50 million central bank scheme that almost succeeded but ultimately did not get carried out. What was the loophole? Who tried to get away with it, and how could it have been prevented?
Well, the fraudulent bank scheme was perpetrated principally by Dr. Aguinaldo Jaime, who at the time was the central bank governor and later became the deputy prime minister of Angola. He tried in June of 2002 to transfer $50 million to the U.S. from the central bank under the pretense of saying it was humanitarian assistance or for humanitarian purposes. The bank in the U.S. thought it was suspicious and returned the money. Then about 2 months later, in August of 2002, he tried the same thing again in conjunction with a couple of other individuals. And again, the bank thought it was suspicious. And in this case, the issue was actually prevented in many ways because two U.S. banks, Citibank and Bank of America, had real issues with it. In fact, it led to Citibank closing down its office in Angola. So in a way, it's a bit of a success story, but I think it also shows that there are unlimited attempts to try and launder or send money abroad from these countries. And what it really shows is that there needs to be far greater scrutiny of, as the hearings call them, politically exposed officials, to make sure that there aren't nefarious activities like this going on in the U.S.
Equatorial Guinea, we've known for many years about Teodoro Obiang Nguema's efforts to pump huge sums into the now-defunct Riggs Bank. There are also mansions and jets and other luxury items involved in this story, along with a wealthy son who helped carry it out. What U.S. laws and agencies could have been invoked to prevent this from ever happening again?
Well, I think there are several. First of all, there are existing banking secrecy and anti-corruption laws that could be more rigorously enforced to go after these things. In the case of Obiang, one of the things the hearings pointed out is that lawyers actively tried to help them circumvent those laws. So I think there has to be more rigor on what lawyers and other associates of people like Obiang and his son are doing. Secondly, the hearings identified a major loophole in the law that needs to be fixed, which is that a lot of corrupt officials like to buy mansions and big houses, and yet there's no obligation on the part of realtors or people like that to identify where the money is coming from. So there should be some change in the law or regulation to make sure that they have to know their customer and do better due diligence when they're dealing with these people. And then thirdly, there need to be professional standards so that people are much more diligent about not being either witting or unwitting accomplices to this kind of kleptocracy and corruption.
Nigeria, former Vice President Atiku Abubakar funneled some $14 million from offshore banks to American University here in Washington, and no questions were asked. Would new legislation prevent these funds from getting into the U.S. in the future?
I think it would make it a lot harder because the legislation proposed would be much more rigorous about identifying these individuals, identifying possible shell companies, and identifying and forcing people to do more due diligence on the source of funds. But at the same time, with the case of American University and others, it is also critically important, even in the absence of legislation, that universities, realtors, and other institutions do an adequate amount of due diligence. Because even if it's not illegal, if this information comes out, it's certainly not acceptable to most of the public. And it would certainly be eye-opening to the people of Nigeria who haven't seen their living standards increase necessarily that the money and the wealth of their country is ending up in a U.S. university.
What services in Nigeria and also in Angola, where I think $4.2 billion vanished over a five-year period, would have been given to African populations? What were the African populations being denied as thousands of people in their countries remain mired in poverty?
Well, I'll give you one comparison in Angola. We documented in a 2004 report that from 1997 to 2002, the time period when Aguinaldo Jaime was either the central bank governor or deputy prime minister, $4.22 billion disappeared during that time. And in the same period, total social and humanitarian spending in the country was $4.27 billion. And every major standard of human development declined during that time. So whether it's health or education or other basic services and essential needs, all could have been improved had that $4.2 billion been invested in the Angolan people instead of being squandered or mismanaged or stolen. In the same way, in Nigeria, we've seen that at the local level, at the state level, where state governments are responsible for paying for and supplying basic primary education and local health care, like clinics, money has been squandered. We documented a situation, in addition to Abubakar, where a Nigerian governor allocated himself a $65,000 a day travel budget, but didn't invest anything in schools and clinics, as was his legal obligation.
Wouldn't scheming realtors here in the United States and corrupt leaders who do business with them always find ways to divert their funds if they have to?
Well, I think the way to look at it is no matter how many laws a society has, whether it's against murder or robbery or anything, there will always be somebody to break the law. But it's a much worse situation if there are no laws or regulations in place. And in this case, the whole issue of realtors is a major loophole. And so you can reasonably assume that as long as it's not illegal, somebody will do it. So the best thing you can do is make it illegal. And when people are caught doing something illegal, they'll be held accountable for it. So yes, in the long term, if something like that were done and the laws were rigorously enforced, I think it would be much more difficult for corrupt officials to do what the hearings today documented.
Now, the final country that was in the case study at the hearing on Capitol Hill was Gabon. One of Africa's longest ruling leaders, Omar Bongo, just died. And what is his legacy in the United States? And now that his son has succeeded him, how should the U.S., under possible new legislation, be treating him?
Well, I think they should be viewing them in the same way that they would view any other corrupt official or any other suspicious transaction, which is rigorously enforce the law, pass new laws where there are loopholes, as Senator Levin and Senator Coburn's hearings have revealed. And third, and the thing that people don't talk about as much, is the U.S. has the power to deny visas to people. One of the easiest ways to prevent people from buying mansions or abusing the wealth of their nation for personal gain is to not let them in the countries where they might do that. And that's the other factor that was less discussed today, but is also a tool available to the government as of right now. So one of the things I think that they should do is have a comprehensive policy to go after corrupt proceeds, go after the individuals who are either facilitating or engaged in these activities, deny them visas so there's no possibility that they can spend their money here and there will be consequences if they try to come over here, and work with governments to repatriate those funds and ultimately make sure that the U.S. government as a whole is pressing hard for increased respect for human rights, increased political accountability for these governments, and increased openness and transparency there as well, so that the public knows what's happening with public funds.
Do you think it's a foregone conclusion that new legislation will sail through outlawing the continuing circumvention of anti-U.S. money laundering controls?
I don't necessarily think it's a foregone conclusion, but as we saw today, there was no sympathy either by Republicans or Democrats for the kind of conduct that was detailed in the hearings. So I think whether it's Senator Coburn or Senator Levin or anyone else on the committee or in Congress, I don't think anyone is going to condone what we heard about. But as is the case with any new law or legislation, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be a cakewalk getting it passed.